It's an American AM. I'm your host, Henry Raines. With me in the broadcast studio, Alan Cross. Sarasota Day is on the hotline. We have open lines. But before we do that, we want to remind you of an exciting event coming up, April 7th, 7:30 p.m. That's a Monday night. And a benefit for the Manatee Democratic Party, Keeping the Dream Alive. Charles McKenzie in a one-man show. Presentation features educator, pastor, and activist Charles McKenzie in a one-man show retrospective of the civil rights movement of the 50s and 60s as seen through the eyes of Dr. Martin Luther King, Jr. Charles McKenzie will portray Dr. King through the words of the great civil rights leader. Admission, $35. Reserve seating, $40. Tea, coffee, snacks will be served. Cash bar will be available. Tickets are available at the Manatee Democratic Party headquarters, 5910 Cortez Road West. And that is right next to the radio station here. Manatee Democratic Party headquarters, 5910 Cortez Road West, or call 941-761-8385, 941-761-8385. That event is Monday, April 7th at 7:30 p.m. at the Golden Apple Dinner Theater, downtown Sarasota. Should be a great evening of entertainment and inspiration, I would say. Also, you have to remember that tomorrow is the last day of the special election for State House District 55. Those of you that live in Southern Pinellas County or parts of Manatee and Sarasota County, basically the 301 corridor, 41-301 corridor, from down through Bradenton, through Manatee County, Bradenton, into Sarasota and Newtown, that is being held tomorrow. Don't let yourself miss that. Let's go to the phone lines. You're live on the air.
Yeah, I found out what happened in that accident that Ken was talking about.
All right, and this would be the one at 15th Street East between 53rd and 57th Avenue that has that relatively busy artery there, 15th Street West. That's actually old 301, and a lot of people have to travel that. So what's up, Mike?
Yeah, I went by in my work truck, and there was nothing there that I could see, so I went to the little corner store there, gas station corner store at 57th and 57th Avenue and 15th Street East, and asked the guys in there, and they said, yeah, it was right up the road there, 3 o'clock in the morning, a minivan came through the intersection, rolled a few times, and then rolled into that used car lot on the east side there, right just south of the Walgreens there.
Cool.
And it smashed up a few cars there. And I guess the person was hurt pretty badly, so they flew in a helicopter and took the person away at sometime around 3 in the morning. So when I drove back up, I took a closer look, and because I knew where it was, and I saw, a couple smashed up cars there, and that's all I could see.
So those of you looking for a new car out there on 15th Street East, now's your opportunity.
Shoot.
Actually, I was just about to report him that the MSP is reporting.
I know the car lot that he's talking about there, and if it smashed up two or three cars there, it must have done $80, $90 worth of damage.
I kept waiting for a punchline, man.
Okay. Michael, thank you for being the special on-the-scene American AM correspondent.
You're welcome.
We're making T-shirts. We'll get him one.
There you go. And
that's funny.
What were you going to add to the...
That the 15th Street East is now open. I did pull that up on the FHP.
Okay.
I'm just having all kinds of computer things.
3 a.m. and they've got it open by 8 a.m.
8 a.m. That's
well
right.
Done. Well done. All right. Let's see what else I want to get here. Lindsey Graham was talking over the weekend, as he often does. That would be Senator Lindsey Graham. Remember, he went shopping for rugs with Senator McCain about a year ago in the Baghdad marketplace and said, oh, everything looks wonderful. And
I think a rug would have helped McCain right now. You know, give him a little more youthful look at that hair thing.
Grecian formula.
Really?
Yeah. Well, actually, having his wife makes him look younger.
Really?
Yeah, if you got his college-age daughter with him there, that would also help make him look younger.
Yeah.
Anyway, Lindsey Graham was on... What show was this? It doesn't matter. Just the same. Face the Nation.
Beat the Mess.
Yeah. Run Your Mouth. One of the Sunday Run Your Mouth shows. And let me get this thing coming up. There it goes. All right. Well done, Henry. Well, I had the follow-up queued, and now this one is blanking the screen out.
Graham, let's start right off with you with a prediction that you made on this program after you came back from Iraq, from one of your many trips to Iraq. You both made 11 trips to Iraq. This was last fall. Let's listen to that.
And it's buffering.
Yeah, I'll make a prediction on your show.
Graham, let's start right off with you with a prediction that you made on this program after you came back from Iraq from one of your many trips to Iraq. You both made 11 trips to Iraq. This was last fall.
Now, you went on to say that we're, quote, about to turn a corner in Iraq.
Now, you just returned from Iraq again. Were you right? Has there been a major breakthrough? Have we turned the corner in Iraq?
The benchmarks because the Iraqi people
a long way
are putting
to go.
Pressure
There's
on their politicians.
Now, you went on to say that we're, quote, about to turn a corner in Iraq. Now, you just returned from Iraq again. Were you right? Has there been a major breakthrough? Have we turned the corner in Iraq?
Very weird.
Oh, yeah, I think so. Well, a long way to go. There's a big battle brewing in Mosul and the south in Iraq is very unsettled. There's Shia militias basically running the show. And Iran is stepping up its efforts to destabilize Iraq because I think they see us winning. But the big picture for me is...
I just wanted to pause it right there where he says Iran is attempting to destabilize Iraq. That's what they want. Total chaos on their border to spill over into their country.
There you go.
Our guest at about 8:40 today is Trita Parsi. He is chairman or president of the National Iraqi American Council. He's also written many books about it. And we're going to be asking him what the recent elections in Iran mean. But we'll also ask him about Senator Graham's statement here.
Have you had him before?
Yeah, he's good.
I
thought so.
He's good.
I'm incredibly pleased with the performance of our troops and General Petraeus. On the political front, we've had the de-Baathification law passed. What does that mean? That means members of the Baath Party who rule the country under Saddam Hussein are now allowed to get some of...
I'm sorry, Senator Graham. That also means that the people that it was supposed to bring back into the government, the Sunnis... This, in the Iraqi parliament, the Sunnis voted against it because it was such a scam law. But the Shiites love it.
Their jobs back, that means the Shias and the Kurds are saying to the Sunnis, come back in and help us run the country. They passed a $48 billion budget where every group in Iraq gets to share the oil resources. There was an amnesty law telling the prisoners in Iraq that we're going to let some of you go back home, stop fighting, help build the new Iraq. And most important of all, we're going to have provincial elections in October. The Sunnis boycotted the election in 2005, and everywhere I went in Anbar province, the Sunnis are ready to vote and be part of democracy. So
the Sunnis are ready to vote, but the real holdup, Alan, was the Shiites, because the different Shiites faction don't want to have the election because they're afraid the other Shiite faction will get into power for those that already have the power. That's
okay.
You know, it's hard for me to believe that he is this uninformed. Is he this uninformed and ignorant, or is he just lying through his teeth?
So there's been major political breakthroughs, economically, oil revenue.
I can't listen to this anymore. Let's go to a report I have from Great Britain. Well, it's actually from Iraq, but from a reporter from Great Britain.
1 year ago, much of Diyala province was a sanctuary for Al-Qaeda. Today, the province is the site of a growing popular uprising against the extremists. And some local tribes are working alongside coalition and Iraqi forces to clear out the enemy.
These are the men George Bush means, but here in Diyala, they're slowly turning against America.
Captain, there's only one God. America is the enemy of God.
Here, in the insurgency's heartland, for the last year, these men have been doing the unthinkable, working with the Americans to rid their town of Al-Qaeda extremists. Dozens of these local movements, called Awakening Councils, have been set up by the U.S. military across Iraq. They pay each man $10 a day.
They're burying an individual.
Today, they're burying one of their own. Also mourning is Abu Amin. He's the leader of the Awakening Council here in Diyala. These armed groups are vital to America's surge strategy, but in this town, they're now on the verge of withdrawing their support.
We are in a crisis. We are on strike.
A year ago, he and the Americans had common purpose. Abu Amin was a school teacher of classical Arabic. But then masked gunmen from the Islamic State of Iraq, what Al-Qaeda wants to create here, paid him a visit. They declared geography, history, and maths to be un-Islamic. and that he must teach Islamic Arabic only.
I asked them, what if I do not comply? They told me, either leave your work or face death.
Unsurprisingly, he quit the school, but still chose to risk his life. He joined the Awakening Council to fight the men who threatened him. The people of Diyala have been terrorized by Al-Qaeda for years. Al-Qaeda routinely filmed their crimes to spread fear, targeting the Awakening Council's families. This woman's son works with Abu Amin. She first learned of her husband and 16-year-old son's beheadings from a DVD Al-Qaeda delivered to her door.
I swear to God, I cry for him every day. He was just a milkman, a very peaceful, poor and simple boy.
Three months ago, Osama bin Laden gave his personal blessing to this campaign of murders, issuing a threat to all Awakening Council members.
Some tribes have joined the Awakening Council. They brought shame to themselves and their families. The alleged voice of Osama bin Laden.
Al-Qaeda's savagery still haunts Diyala. 40 people from the same family were murdered here.
Al-Qaeda were innovators in terror. There was torture and beheadings. One room for the men, one for the women, and one for the children. We found over 40 people here, some buried up to their necks and left to die of thirst and starvation. Nobody found them, as this place is so remote.
Those 40 lie buried here. The man Abu Amin is burying, killed in error by the Americans, is one of 454 members of the Awakening Council killed in 11 months. They say they've never been paid by the Americans, and their discontent is growing.
Diyala has been liberated by our forces, but the fate is the work of the government and the Americans. That is why the government and Americans could not reach the Al-Qaeda without us. I am ready to go on TV and face any official who claims they claim Diyala.
Their growing anger has led them to stage a strike. This banner is a sign of their resolve. It announces an end to cooperation with the Americans. These Sunni men say they're excluded by the Shia government, who've barred them from jobs in the police and army. This vital alliance crumbling, the Americans, who refer to these groups as Concerned Local Citizens, or CLCs, are now worried.
If they quit, then it appears that the public is quitting
Captain
with
Robert
them.
Gable.
And then it's all reliant on government of Iraq to provide security. That is something that we hope does not happen. We hope the CLCs continue to work, provide security for their area, their neighborhoods, so we can all work together on one front to maintain security in Diyala and Iraq.
We have spoken to 49 of the Awakening Councils set up across Iraq. In the majority of districts, they've not been paid as promised. Many have quit altogether, 500 in Abu Ghraib and 800 in Tikrit. But most worryingly, Diyala has set an example. In Hilla, they've told us they intend coordinating a nationwide strike. They told us repeatedly they feel used by the Americans to take on Al-Qaeda. And now they've done that job, they feel abandoned. Discontent has spread to the heart of the surge, Baghdad.
The American army still owe me $28,000, which I spent on their behalf. The success of the surge is not all it's cracked up to be. The media exaggerates its success for the sake of the US elections.
The goal of the surge is to provide that security.
The surge of troops has made an undeniable dent in
Iraqi surge.
All of this, of course, is still fragile.
And that the troop surge is working.
Washington's cure for the sectarian violence that swept Iraq was to arm and organize these local groups. Now this key part of the surge strategy could be unraveling. So, as America focuses on how their troops will leave, these men, once the solution to Washington's problems, are isolated, angry, and 80,000 strong.
From the Guardian of London, their video services. And, you know, I wonder how much this has to do with these lists of violence that I keep reading and that keep going up over the last few months.
Well, it's very disturbing, him, and I'm looking there, and I'm seeing the faces of the people in that community, and as we're fading to black, there was one man that they focused on, and I'm thinking to myself, you know, by today, by the time we've seen this, this man could have been taken out by these roving gangs of thugs and beheaded for doing nothing more than burying the dead, you know, for nothing more than having been in that community, for nothing more than being mistaken identity. And, you know, how can you stop these? They're nothing more than thugs and hoodlums. They're gangs gone wild. The beheading of the young milkman that the mother mentioned, not only was it bad enough that they beheaded an innocent man, then they were so horrid enough as to take a video of it to the mother. I mean, this is just despicable, and I don't see how you can work with or negotiate with or treat these people, this type of situation, with any type of civility. It just blows the mind.
This was Sunni on Sunni violence, too.
I know. I mean, you know, we understand the Sunni and Shiite situation, but now we got Sunni on Sunni, and you know, how do you break this up? It'd be like, to us, it would be like two Methodist churches, the Free Methodist and the United Methodist, deciding they're going to duke it out for the claim of Methodist church overall, or, a couple of the Pentecostal factions going at
it. A better example would be one of the gangs, and it doesn't have to be Latino, it could be the Haitian gangs or any of the ethnic gangs that operate in a certain neighborhood here in Manatee County or Hillsborough County or wherever. If the residents organized against them, it would be that kind of violence on violence. By the way, Coquina Beach,
Go right ahead.
No, last Easter at Coquina Beach, we had three people shot?
Three shootings there by the bathhouse.
Yeah.
By the restaurants.
I happened to be driving past Coquina Beach about 3 o'clock yesterday afternoon, and I had forgotten about last year. I knew it was Easter yesterday, but I saw all the sheriff's cars all over the place, and I'm like, well, what's going on? Because the thing was, at 3 o'clock, normally, the beach is pretty full.
It's especially packed, on absolutely.
Easter. Thousands of people there, they had the mounted posse out, and I saw Hillsborough County cars there, Hillsborough County Sheriff cars.
Right.
But you would never know it was Easter. You wouldn't even know it was Sunday on Coquina.
Well, basically what happened was the shootings last year was the second or third year in a row that we've had some kind of violence and gang activity out on Coquina Beach. Easter Sunday, Cinco de Mayo, and the Memorial Day were three big days when there was a large contingent of Hispanics.
Sometimes
that were there.
10,000. If you go on Longboat Key on those days, too, the Longboat Key cops, you don't want to be driving while Latino on Longboat
Absolutely
Key on that day,
not.
I'll tell you.
So the interesting point is, so last year they did a major renovation, reworked the parking lots, and basically what they did was the problems were the crowd was spread out over the entire beach area, and what they started doing was funneling people into specific parking lots. When that parking lot was full, then they would allow them to move on down into the other parking lots, with the most distant parking lot being the last one filled. Now, where I'm going with this was what was happening was you were having clusters of groups that were kind of claiming territory or turf on the beach. And then when you had somebody else that they knew was not from their group venture into that, then that's when you had the problems. Now, you mentioned this, Henry, and it's funny because I took my daughter Jamie to work yesterday morning right around 10:30 or so. Over at 75th and Cortez Road, I looked over and I see all these SWAT officers, and I think, oh, Winn-Dixie's under siege, you know, and I'm looking around. This was a staging area. And the special weapons and tactics, we're dropping by. I'm watching these guys in their field clothes with the boots tucked in, the pants tucked into the boots, putting on the bulletproof vest.
Downtown Baghdad.
Bringing in the four-wheel drive ATVs and getting ready. And when I came back after having dropped Jamie off, coming back out, now the cars were lined up in a procession getting ready to go to Coquina Beach for Easter Sunday. So the police in Bradenton and Ormantic County do not release the numbers of officers that are out there, but I'll tell you what I saw right now was 15 to 20 police vehicles in a line getting ready to go to the beach for Easter Sunday, which I think is very, very sad in this day and age that we have to have that kind of thing, that we have to take all these police officers away from their families on Easter Sunday and police an area because there are groups of individuals that can't contain themselves and have no problems at all shooting it up in a family atmosphere. We got young Stacey Williams who was shot and killed because of a drive-by, because of fights over girls, or a girl who's an ugly, skanky girl, by the way, chick. I don't know why anybody's fighting over you. And this poor little 12-year-old boy gets shot and killed. And now what's happening? They can't get any witnesses to come out because the witnesses are being threatened. Now show me the logic that you've got a kid that's involved with any gang and you're going to threaten a witness because this punk-ass kid shot and killed a 12-year-old child and you're going to threaten somebody. Snitches get stitches. I tell you what ought to be got with you people that are making the threats. Somebody needs to come over and kick your ass and keep kicking until they're done because that's absolutely outrageous. And these young kids, these punks that did it, that shot and killed this child, that need to go to jail, and they need to go to jail for a long, long time.
You
I feel much
that.
Better now.
Yeah, you can say that, but when the bullet comes flying through your house in the neighborhood.
Well, that's what's so tragic. You got another kid that was shot and killed in a trailer here locally. And they now they can't get anybody to come forward on that.
Okay, we're going to be running out of time here.
Yes, we are.
But I think, luckily, there wasn't any violence to speak of, but I think mainly it was because people didn't go out there.
They did not go out there, and it was known because last year and this year because of the police presence and the redesign of the parking areas.
All right, let's go to Ken.
You know, Alan, what really happened has nothing to do with parking at the beach. What's happened is that for many years now, the gang problem and the violence problem in Manatee County has been ignored. And so that's why two of the three shootings that you mentioned didn't occur at the beach in the parking lot.
Oh, no, they didn't.
And we've had shootings, occur all over Manatee County that are gang related. And so the issue was ignored because people tended to congregate at the beach, we had that situation out there, but we've also had shootings in the Toys R Us parking lot. We had the shootings near DeSoto Square Mall. We had the shooting of that young boy on the bicycle. That's what's going on. And they really need to get a handle on the gang and the violence problem throughout all of Manatee County.
No doubt about it. Absolutely.
Throughout Tampa Bay.
Absolutely.
All right, thank you, Ken. Is Dave still with us?
Yeah.
Oh, you've been so quiet.
He's having a bagel. He's sipping his coffee. He's waiting for us to say something.
Were you working on sports?
I was kind of enjoying Alan's thing. I mean, he was right on, man. I couldn't have said it better myself.
So you're going to form the vigilante group with him? Your Awakening Council? You guys can go over and police there?
I'm going to call Clint Eastwood. Hang him high.
That's right. That's right.
I'm in kind of a hang him mood today. You know what I'm saying? Beat him like it's redheaded stepchild. Hang him.
You go to church yesterday?
I did. You know, and it's funny. It kind of wore off quick, didn't it?
It sure did. Were you going to do sports today, Dave?
Is it time for sports?
Well, I was just getting ready because we got a tight schedule here for the next 10 minutes.
Well, go to break and I'll whip something together right quick.
Well, that's okay. I've got other things I could do. You whip, and I will play this because this is a little bit lighter, and maybe it's a good time to take us out on this. Fox News is squabbling with each other. Fox News, there was this quote that they'll explain about Obama. And actually, the host on Fox and Friends, the two men, get into it, and the one walks right off the stage. And then a little bit later, Chris Wallace takes him to task. Chris Wallace, of course, one of the anchors on Sunday morning, and another show comes on and tells him they've been, they haven't been playing nice with Obama, is basically what he's saying. They're not necessarily playing nice, you're just not doing real news, you guys. Like, I guess Chris Wallace, having Mike Wallace for a dad, still thinks Fox is about news. Okay, go ahead. This has had a, been a very interesting technical day here. So,
I wonder what happened over the weekend. Were they, you know?
I guess we're just going to have to let it buffer and play.
Buffer.
Yeah, usually this thing's like lightning fast.
It's something about the HuffingtonPost.com website that you can't, if you let a video sit there too long, something goes wrong. And now it's totally screwing up. Here it comes. Never let them see you sweat, Alan, but I guess really? We don't have to on the radio.
That's right. We'll just... Who was it asked about us having a webcam last week?
Yeah, right.
Really?
And...
How you feel? Are you offended by Barack Obama yesterday referring to his grandma as a typical white person?
That those three words are a problem.
Yes,
absolutely. But
if you listen to the intent,
let me just finish, please. If you listen to the intent of what he's saying, he does not want. You know for a fact that he does not want to diminish white people. And if you don't believe him, he's half white, and he's trying to say my grandmother grew up probably in the 30s, and there was a different view of whites. And this reverend was growing up during the 60s, when there was white only bathrooms and water fountains. So he has a different view of we doing this, and that's what he was trying to say in the speech.
But the offense is that he was trying to turn the story allegedly onto somebody else instead of looking at the one issue face front.
He's trying to turn it. He's saying it's a bigger picture. Reverend Wright is not isolated.
But don't make generalizations about race when we're trying to talk about it deep down. Let's just put it all out there then. Don't make a generalization, a gross generalization about a whole group of society.
But he meant to say, and was clarified by his campaign, to say it's more generational than it is about racial.
Well, that may be more true.
Right.
But that's not what he said.
But when you're in an unscripted interview with sports guys, sometimes you're not measuring every word as opposed to the teleprompter.
Said you're a typical sports guy, would you take offense at that?
Look at that. I prove my point. There you go.
Email us right now, friends@foxnews.com.
Whoa! He took double offense.
And
he's
got
to lay off the sink. All right, email us right now, friends@foxnews.com. And there he goes.
Just don't call me a typical woman, because then you're going to be the only person sitting there.
Woo!
All right. That was a little bit of pro wrestling like to me. But what Obama was saying, and I think they'll do the full quote here in a second with the Chris Wallace segment, is he said, my grandmother, if she sees a strange black man walking through her neighborhood, gets fearful, like a typical white woman. Now, I'm sorry. I think most white women I know would probably react that way.
Right.
It may be unjustified. But I don't think he was diminishing his grandmother. Let's hear what Chris Wallace had to say about this. And
Watching the show since 6 o'clock this morning, when I got up, and it seems to me that 2 hours of Obama bashing on this this typical white person remark is somewhat excessive. And frankly, I think you're somewhat distorting what Obama had to say. I've actually flipped it out of the paper.
All right.
And what he said was, the point I was making was not that my mother harbors any racial animosity. She doesn't. But she is a typical white person, which is where you generally have clipped it.
No.
But what he went on to say is, if she sees somebody on the street that she doesn't know, there's a reaction that's been bred into our experiences that don't go away and that sometimes comes out in the wrong way. And that's just the nature of race in our society. I'm not saying it's the most felicitous remark that anybody ever made, but
Chris, hold on. Right, we've actually read the complete soundbite 3 times so far. But and we posed this question to our viewers whether or not they were offended by that.
I just want to stop it. He says they read it 3 times.
Yes.
But if you actually look at the video for the 2 hours, they keep flashing up just in quotes, typical white woman, typical white, you know, so 3 read-throughs and then the graphic for 2 hours. Well, let's keep going on this.
It just seems curious that because Barack Obama said this and people are going, oh, you're being too sensitive or whatnot. But had Hillary Clinton said something on the other side, had she said, well, that's a typical Irish person, Polish person, Italian person, Swedish person, whatever, it'd hit the fan.
Well, I mean, all I can tell you is that I've been watching on and off for a couple of hours, and every clip I've seen ends at, that's a typical white person, when in fact he's going on to discuss the nature of race in our country. And again, I'm not saying it was the, if he had it to do over again, that he'd necessarily say it that way. But I don't think that he was making a hyper-racial remark. And I guess I just feel like on a day when he's been endorsed by Bill Richardson, sure, and we have this story about the passports and the State Department officials looking into them, I feel like 2 hours of Obama bashing may...
Well, there you have it from Chris Wallace.
Wow.
Well, you know, the crazy thing is, Henry, I was listening to one of the right-wing talk shows last night on my way home, and all of a sudden, Obama's middle name seems to be a part of his name. He's no longer Barack Obama. And the right-wing are constantly now throwing in the Barack Hussein Obama, and that's how they refer to him every sentence.
And Newsweek has a feature story this week, a feature story analyzing when Barack Obama, because they used to call him Barry in high school.
Barry, yes.
And then he went to college and decided he wanted to be called by his real name, or rather his full name, his official name, Barack. And they're devoting space in Newsweek about what happened to Barack Obama. How many people grow up and don't want to be called by their nickname anymore?
Well, you know, Jimmy Carter wanted to be called.
Danny and Billy and, you know, and all those little cutesy kid names. You know, when you get to
I'd like to have a president named Barry. What about Barry Goldwater?
Barry White for president. There you go.
There you go.
How about Lindsay, for God's sake? What a word.
Scooter. Scooter didn't get rid of his name.
What'd you say?
Scooter Libby. He didn't get rid of his name.
Oh, I thought you were taking a shot at me.
If we're going to get to sports, we have to get through our entertainment news segment. And, of course, this computer has... Somebody has poured molasses in our computer here. And... look at this, Alan. Yeah. What is going on with
guys
thing?
In here downloading Latino porno all week long?
That
must
be
expect,
it.
You know?
I guess what? That was it.
It's time for the Rose Report with Shannon Rose.
Do I need to come there and show you how to use a computer, Henry?
Why don't?
We have a lot of entertainment news, so let's get right to it. Britney Spears' TV wardrobe is up for sale. It seems like everyone wants a piece of Britney Spears. And they can get her clothing also.
Very fast.
Low ratings have doomed Jericho. They've been canceled once again. And they're airing their final episode on Tuesday.
They were brought back by viewer demand, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, but then this year their episodes really stuck up the TV.
Well, my wife watches the show, and I can't get into the show for some reason. But the reason why is because I'm watching the Kim Kardashian show. Or, well, she's thinking of insuring her butt. That's the latest news.
Uh-huh.
Yeah.
She's going to be on WrestleMania this weekend, too.
Yes, she will, and we'll talk about that in a moment. I also want to talk about, let's see here, Chocolate Rain claims a YouTube award. Tay Zonde morphed from an unknown musician to an internet superstar who got booked on national TV through his song Chocolate Rain. Amateur clip on YouTube. So he won. They had some kind of awards coming up, and he won that.
Cool.
Hello?
Yeah, that's cool.
Okay. Sorry, I'm hearing the on-air signal there. Okay, Heather Mills kept half her dancing earnings. I'm sure you're aware that she recently got a almost $50 million divorce settlement from Paul McCartney last week. And she wasn't really hard up because she got some of her money that she got from Dancing with the Stars, because I'm sure everybody gets paid on that show.
Unlike some kind of promotions.
Yeah. Also, let's jump into what movies were hot this week. Dr. Seuss. Was number one. Number two was Tyler Perry's Meet the Browns. And number three was Shudder.
Okay.
Let's jump into some WrestleMania news. Now, you brought up, Henry, WrestleMania, and it's coming up this coming Sunday. I'm actually attending. I'm going to be in Orlando all weekend with the festivities, and I'm working a wrestling show on Saturday for USW in Orlando. But then Saturday night I'm going to the Hall of Fame ceremonies, which is the prelude to WrestleMania, and they're going to be inducting Peter Maivia, who is the grandfather of The Rock, and also Rocky Johnson, and The Rock will be there to induct them. And, of course, Ric Flair is going to get an award.
Wonderful.
So how did you get tickets?
I'm sorry?
How did you get in on that?
I have my inside sources, and I got hooked up. And then Sunday's WrestleMania. And one of the big matches they're talking about, not only in wrestling world, but also in the sports and entertainment world, is Floyd Money Mayweather against The Big Show.
That's such a mismatch.
Yeah, that's like you fighting me.
That's
of course,
worse.
You'd be
that's
Mayweather's
worse.
Side.
And for people that don't know who the Big Show is, how does he? What's the size difference between those two, Shannon?
Well, Big Show is well over 7 feet 5 inches, and he's actually this is the truth, bigger than Andre the Giant. Everybody said Andre was 7 feet tall, but actually he had lifts in his feet. He was a lot shorter than that, but he weighed more than Big Show does. But Big Show's also lost some weight. But Big Show does have an incredible size onto Floyd Mayweather, who may be able to punch him in the face a couple of times, but I don't think he can match the size.
And what's Floyd Mayweather, about 5'7", 5'8", maybe?
Something like that, yeah.
And okay. except for money, what is even the purpose of this?
Money.
Well,
money.
Supposedly they're saying that Money Mayweather got $20 million, which is not true. The reports are it's you know, a few million, but also he's getting pay-per-view revenue, whatever he grosses for, you know, for that night. But what he's getting off of it is star status to a younger audience. In fact, De La Hoya has said, even though they went to De La Hoya and asked him to participate in this match, and he declined, WWE asked him, but he did say that this is good for boxing because what it's doing is bringing a younger demographic from wrestling into the boxing world, which sometimes has a hard time crossing over.
Especially since they're up against the Ultimate Fighting now, which everybody seems to be jumping on the bandwagon there.
Well, WWE has approached that. Shane McMahon is actually a proponent of Mayweather, and it's been an idea. Actually, last year they couldn't do it because De La Hoya's fight and some other things going on. But Shane McMahon wants eventually WWE to get into the MMA game, but right now it's not going to happen because Vince still, and if you look at Vince's track record, you know, some of the stuff outside of wrestling hasn't always been as successful, i.e. XFL. But who knows, maybe they'll get into that game if UFC keeps moving up in the world. And as you heard recently, I think it's Elite XC, which is on Showtime. I may be incorrect on the name of the promotion, but they signed on with CBS. So you're going to see Ultimate Fighting, not Ultimate Fighting Championship, but Ultimate Fighting on CBS coming up with big matches and whatnot.
Absolutely amazing. And like I say, it's a whole lot of people are jumping on the Ultimate Fighting Champion bandwagon. I mean, it's real.
Yeah, but you don't want to get burned out. Eventually what's going to happen is you're going to see too much too quick, and people are going to get burned out on it, and then you're going to see, just like wrestling, periods of ups and downs. But right now it is very much a high, and everybody wants to jump in it and, you know, become sponsors of it. Budweiser, I think, is doing Ultimate Fighting now. So a lot of companies are going with it rather than wrestling.
Excellent point there. I hadn't even thought about that, but you're right, and there's a whole lot of factions coming out of the woodwork.
Right. Okay, guys, that's it. You just felt the Rose Effect, and I'll see everybody at WrestleMania.
Thank you.
American A&M sports fans, happy Monday. It's Easter Monday, too, I might add. And NCAA March Madness news. Duke dismissed in second round. For Duke, there was no escaping this. Coach Bob Huggins has West Virginia playing tough man-to-man defense and hustling after every rebound. West Virginia, 26-10, limited Duke to 38% shooting from the floor and held a 47-27 edge on the boards. Final score was, what was it?
Well done.
It doesn't matter what the final score was. They beat them 73-67 in the West Regional on Saturday. West Virginia moves forward to the Sweet 16. Duke goes home with their tail between their legs. And for those of you who hate Duke as much as I do, that is a celebration. And continued stories, Duke's cross-state rival, North Carolina, routes Arkansas 108-77 to also reach the round of 16. They put a pretty good spanking on Arkansas, who's not a bad team, 108-77, routing them in the second round. Roy Williams' team, head coach of North Carolina, is off and running to the round of 16, where another comfortable setting awaits. They'll be playing round three in Charlotte, approximately 2 hours from their home of Chapel Hill. That's almost not fair.
Dave, we got to wrap.
Oh, one last thing. The more important news, Tiger Woods on beaten streak lives another day. Barring a big comeback, however, it'll live only one more day as he is behind five strokes with seven to play behind Jeff Ogilvy, Jim Furyk, and Vijay Singh in Doral at the World Championship Open. God bless you, Tiger. It was a hell of a run. I'm out.
Thank you, Dave.
The best way to avoid an accident-related injury is to avoid the accident. Slow down, drive defensively, and please wear your seatbelt. If you've been injured in an accident, you probably have questions. How will I pay the doctors? What if I'm out of work? Who will fix my car? You may not know where to turn. You're inundated with TV and radio commercials. You may even have received letters from lawyers or doctors. At Callens Little Delgado and Opstal, we understand how confusing an accident can be, and we want to help answer your questions. Call us today at 941-749-1446. One of our attorneys will meet with you and help answer any questions that you have. There's no charge to meet with us, and our fees are based on a percentage of what we recover for you. I'm Scott Callens at Callens Little Delgado and Opstal. We work hard serving our clients and our community. Call us at 941-749-1446 and let us help answer your questions. Callens Little Delgado and Opstal are proud sponsors of the Manatee County YMCA. For more information, call us at 941-749-1446 or reach us at makeempay.net.
Oh, I can't face another day of pain.
You don't have to suffer in pain another day. Dr. Owen McCarthy, specializing in orthopedics and sports medicine, has been bringing relief to sufferers of arthritis, auto accidents, work-related injuries, and sports injuries for over 30 years. A board-certified physician, Dr. McCarthy will take a conservative, cautious approach to your treatment, but he will get you relief. With offices in Bradenton and Sun City Center, Dr. Owen McCarthy can treat patients anywhere in our broadcast area. Give him a call today at 941-795-3844. 941-795-3844. Accepting Medicare, most commercial insurances, and private payers. Give Dr. McCarthy a call, 941-795-3844. It's American AM. I'm your host, Henry Raines. And our next guest, Trita Parsi, Dr. Trita Parsi, is the author of Treacherous Alliance, The Secret Dealings of Iran, Israel, and the United States. His website is TritaParsi.com, TritaParsi.com. The link is on the AmericanAM.com guest page. Besides his book and website, he's currently the co-founder. He is the co-founder and the current president of the National Iranian American Council. He's a frequent commentator on BBC World News, PBS NewsHour, CNN, Al Jazeera, C-SPAN, NPR. List goes on and on, and he graces us with his presence today. Trita Parsi, thank you for joining us and being so patient this morning.
Thank you for having me.
Yes, we asked you on to get your take on the recent elections in Iran. I've seen a couple different interpretations of this, but in particular, what faction within the Iranian government prospered the most from the results of these elections, and how do you think that will affect relations with the United States?
Well, in the short term, it seems like the more hardline people around Ahmadinejad have been able to secure a victory. However, I don't believe in the long run that this is going to be to their benefit. For instance, they did a tremendous amount of cheating to get reformist candidates out of the ballots. Yet the reformists seem to have increased their numbers in the parliament, which then would indicate that had the elections been more fair, the Ahmadinejad faction would have suffered somewhat of a defeat. So by 2009, when Ahmadinejad is up for re-election for presidency and when it's going to be probably much more difficult for him to cheat as much as they did this time around, then he will probably be faced with some sort of a surprise and may actually be defeated. Now, it's a very, very long time till those elections. There's about a year left. So a lot can happen. But I think the saddest aspect of what has happened with the elections is to see how the tensions between the United States and Iran have had, as one of its effects, the shrinking of the Iranian political spectrum while also shifting it very much to the right. So we have a much more hard-line political spectrum inside of Iran right now that has shifted to the right and has also shrunk in the sense that people that were not as hard-line are increasingly finding it difficult to have their voices heard politically.
Now, within the hard-liners, that grouping of politicians and leaders, are there significant rivals to Ahmadinejad within that group? Is he looking over his shoulder at anybody?
Well, that's exactly what's happened. That's precisely because of the fact that the entire spectrum has shifted to the right. The real competitors, the viable competitors to Ahmadinejad, are actually people on the right as well. These are other hardliners that go by the name of being pragmatic hardliners, in the sense that they may be pretty tough, they may drive a hard bargain, but they would drive a bargain nevertheless, unlike Ahmadinejad, who seems more interested in presenting the West and the United States with a fait accompli. So the toughest components he's going to be faced with are going to be people from the conservative camp, not necessarily people from the reformist camp.
Now, when we talk about hardliners, does that necessarily mean that they are hardline in pursuing their nuclear program, their nuclear energy program, or is that more on the spiritual cultural side?
It's more on the general political outlook. They don't share the same perspective as the reformists who want to liberalize Iranian society. In that sense, when it comes to the nuclear program, I think there are differences, one of them being that the pragmatic hardliners are more keen on pursuing negotiations with the West, whereas the Ahmadinejad crowd is more interested in basically going ahead with the program and point out that the West really doesn't have much of a legal case against Iran, so why negotiate? I think we will also see a difference in the sense that the more pragmatic hardliners are going to send much more conciliatory signals towards the United States, not necessarily to cozy up too much with the U.S., but to kind of point out that they are going to be different from the Ahmadinejad presidency if they get power.
We're speaking with Dr. Trita Parsi. His latest book is Treacherous Alliance, The Secret Dealings of Iran, Israel, and the United States. The website is TritaParsi.com. Also, he is president of the National Iranian American Council, and let me give you that website. That is NIAcouncil.org, NIAcouncil.org. We played a soundbite earlier from Senator Lindsey Graham. I think he might have been on Face the Nation, where he was, besides touting all the wonderful success in Iraq that he alleges, that he also made the allegation that Iran is actively working to destabilize Iraq. Is that in their interest, and what do you think of that claim?
I think it's a claim that doesn't seem to rest on a very strong foundation. Now, certainly the Iranians are doing things in Iraq that are unhelpful, but the idea that destabilization of Iraq lies in their interest is following the same type of neoconservative logic that got us into Iraq in the first place, in which we make completely unfounded assumptions about the interest of the other states, and then we act on them, and then we get really surprised when it turns out that it was false. The Iranians have an interest in a stable Iraq, but they also have an interest in making sure that Iraq does not get stable in such a fashion so that the United States would be able to free up its resources and attack Iran. So they're playing a double game. On the one hand, they want a stable Iraq, but they don't want it fast enough so that the United States would be able to, within the term of the Bush administration, find itself in a much more capable position to attack Iran militarily. But in the long run, it is Iran actually in the region that has most stakes in Iraq and the greatest interest in making sure that Iraq is stabilized and that the current government in Iraq survives, because the current government in Iraq is a Shiite government, is very friendly towards Iran, and it is actually some of the U.S.'s allies, particularly Saudi Arabia and Jordan, that are playing a much more difficult role in Iraq, in the sense that they have yet to open up an embassy there, they have yet to show any support for the government over there, and there is a tremendous amount of resources flowing from these two Sunni Arab states to the Sunni militias as well as to Al-Qaeda. And this is something that we in Washington know, but we have great discomfort talking about and addressing, and it would be much more in the United States' interest to take a look at Iraq and recognize where some of the problems are coming from. And if they're coming from our friends, deal with it instead of looking for scapegoats.
The book is Treacherous Alliance, The Secret Dealings of Iran, Israel, and the United States. You get a much more in-depth overview than what is normally available in our media. The website is TritaParsi.com. TritaParsi.com. The link is on the AmericanAM.com guest page. Dr. Trita Parsi has been our guest. And Trita, with just the last 60 seconds, I just have to ask you from almost like professional curiosity. I see that your old boss, Congressman Bob Ney, is getting into talk radio. What did you think when you heard that?
I didn't know that.
Oh, yeah. And the amazing thing is, it's supposedly a liberal... normally a syndicator of liberal radio hosts.
Interesting. Well, I got to tell you, I am not necessarily very surprised. I think the image that people have gotten of Congressman Ney is not necessarily an accurate one. A lot of people don't know that he was one of three members of Congress that the first time around voted against the Patriot Act.
Very
interesting. He's a thing that a lot of people are not aware of.
Very interesting. Oh, I'm glad you pointed that out to me. Trita, it's great that you made yourself available to us, and I really
appreciate
it.
Thank you so much for having me.
Thank you.
Always my pleasure.
Bye-bye.
Thank you.
Dr. Trita Parsi, Treacherous Alliance, Secret Dealings of Iran, Israel, and the United States. I also want to remind you of the April 7th, 7:30 p.m. show at the Golden Apple Dinner Theater, Keeping the Dream Alive, featuring Charles McKenzie in a one-man show recreating Dr. Martin Luther King, Jr. I want to thank Trita Parsi. I want to thank Alan, Dave, Shannon, and all our callers and listeners for contributing. We'll be back tomorrow with another American AM.
And I said, whoa.